Hi, this is Tiffany Montgomery from Shop Eat Surf. Arcade Belts is one of the industry's brightest young companies. In 8 years, the brand has come to dominate industry belt sales at surf, skate, and snow stores. We talked with president and co-founder Tristan Queen about how Arcade is managing its crazy growth, how its retail base is holding up, and about future plans for the company. Now, here is our conversation with Tristan. So I'm on the phone with Tristan Queen, the president and co-founder of Arcade Belts, which I'm sure all of you guys know has just been growing like crazy and has become a real force in the belt market. So thank you for joining me on this call.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I appreciate it. So I've looked at some numbers, like the Action Watch numbers and things like that, that just shows Arcade, like your market share in belts, just crazy growth. How have you guys been able to do that?
Yeah, you know, it's a formula we kind of started out in snow with, and we kind of cut our teeth in that market. That was kind of our original channel, and we kind of took our lumps initially in that. And I think a lot of those retailers possibly don't show up in Action Watch. So when we started looking at kind of branching into new markets that felt very organic and natural and authentic to us, we'd kind of already found this formula in snow and outdoor, and were able to bring it over. But it really was just there was kind of a void in the market, both from not having a true leader from a brand perspective and also from a product and technology perspective. So it wasn't just one or the other. It was kind of this perfect storm of, it was just a black hole for retailers. And for us, it felt like kind of a black hole for the consumer too, that there just weren't really very good options out there.
So knowing going in, did you know what you wanted it to be? I mean, how hard was it to get in initially to stores?
It was pretty difficult. We've always known what we wanted in the product, and we've always been product first and consumer first. We still feel like we're our own customer in a lot of ways, and we want to kind of keep that as kind of a core part of the business. The opportunity at retail, I don't think really presented itself clearly for the first couple of years, but we definitely knew what we wanted and what we wanted to be, which was, you know, essentially the king of belts. But it definitely wasn't this one faceted kind of, no one's owning it, we should just put a fixture in and say we did it, and now we're the king of belts. There was a lot more to it. So I guess the short answer is we knew what we wanted in a product, and we believed in it, and we thought that other people would too. But then created a formula around that to get it out there. Retailers were definitely reluctant at first because they'd been burned by some belt brands previously, and buying belts was not exactly a fun experience for them, and managing the inventory with the sizing and how they're merchandised and all of that was not the favorite thing for retailers or buyers to be open to looking at. So the early days was pretty challenging.
And what is the formula?
You know, for us, it really started out with making sure that people liked what we were making in the first place. And that really came from seeing the other options out there and not really feeling like they functioned or fit our lifestyle, which was active, sometimes wearing the same pair of jeans a couple days in a row and throwing them in the wash and, you know, going from a surf trip back to, you know, we're up in North Lake Tahoe, up in the mountains. And a leather traditional belt didn't really work great for that. The kind of clamshell logo stamp stuff didn't either. So we really believed in, you know, something that was meant for travel and fit better and had this functionality. And so that's the key component to the formula. But we worked really closely with our first few retailers to solve the merchandising part of the formula. Belts kind of look like a rat's nest in the back corner of a lot of stores, and we were lucky enough to have some retailers in the early days that let us do it wrong a couple times. And we were, you know, hand making these fixtures locally, and which we still do at times. So that was, you know, the original part of the formula was just trying to make a product that was better. And then the second phase was making sure it was presented differently and priced to have some value in it. You know, it's about the same price as a t-shirt or a hat. So fitting into the accessories game a little bit. Was definitely the second phase.
Okay. And now, how long have you guys been in business now?
We actually started in 2010. So we've been at it for a bit now. the first few years, we were still working other jobs, and it was definitely kind of a side fun project and didn't really have the time dedicated to it or any real resources put towards it.
Gotcha. Okay. So are there any like key lessons you've learned along the way in these 8 years?
Definitely. We've taken our lumps. Our version of building a business is different than a lot of other people's. We definitely have gone this traditional wholesale model and blended it with kind of the D2C and Amazon. And I think in the early days, kind of SKU discipline, back-end logistics, and kind of production and delivery timelines were things that we didn't focus on as much because we just saw opportunity and we had so many ideas. So I think a little bit of SKU discipline and back-end logistics, you know, inventory management and picking the right partners to help with the areas maybe that aren't your strong points was probably the most important lesson for us to learn early on, as well as quite a few financial lessons and the importance of margin at times and other times not letting margin be the only thing you care about because it can force you into making some decisions that have other repercussions.
And how are you guys? Are you guys okay on money at this point? I mean, I know all young businesses need money. I mean, do you have the partners you need? Do you have capital? I mean, how are you handling that? The demands on cash flow?
We are in the best position we've ever been in. But that's, you know, there's definitely an asterisk next to that. In the early days, there's never enough money going around. We were as lean as could be. The only, you know, the earnings just went back to more product and fixtures. Fixtures are a huge investment. And basically, for the last 7 years, our marketing budget was in-store fixturing. And so we've always needed more cash for these really good reasons. And we did do some small rounds early on that were mostly just friends and some connections and things like that. We did a fairly decent one last year, and then we've kind of tried to put that to bed a little bit and run a profitable business that's growing, but we're not trying to do growth that forces us into this repetitive cycle of raising money because it's really time consuming. It teaches you a lot, but it's also resource draining just to chase funding. So we've feathered the gas pedal a little bit with the growth because we don't really feel like it's an opportunity that's going to go away if we don't capture it right now. So we can grow in a healthy, sustainable, kind of managed, disciplined way that doesn't make it so that we're just looking under the couch cushions for some coins to buy more product.
So sort of intentionally holding back a little bit.
In a way, yeah. We're not saying no to a ton of opportunities, but we're kind of just scaling in a measured way. And it's partly, you know, we're kind of passing through these test phases with quite a few national accounts at the same time, which are still fairly specialty, but not having, you know, not making promises that are going to force us into a really difficult financial situation because we have something now that's got real value and we have real employees with jobs and mortgages and families in Tahoe. And we take that seriously and we want to, you know, continue to be a part of this community here. So just being responsible with the growth so that we're not running flat out at all times.
That sounds smart. Well, let's turn to like, what is new with you guys? Like, do you have any new initiatives? What's sort of going on?
Yeah, a bunch of new stuff. There's quite a few things we want to bring to life from a product perspective. Our eyes have been opened quite a bit into, you know, branching out into some other areas, but still within the belt category. We kind of want to focus on keeping the tip of the spear sharp, as they say, and kind of, you know, continuing to be the king of belts. We see an endless runway at this point with our model, both internationally and even domestically, new channels, new markets, and we're getting pulled into a lot of those by people finding our product and sending an email and saying, this is the best belt we've ever used for this. So that's right now, it's mostly about just kind of capitalizing on those opportunities, building up on the back end. We have a new VP of sales who's really helped and kind of reimagining our marketing approach from grassroots only to maybe something a bit more strategic. And then just balancing out our business a little bit with all these amazing wholesale partners that we've had and want to continue to have with D2C, which is last year it was only 6% of our business. And this year it's actually grown but shrunk as a percentage because of how quickly wholesale is growing. So I think we're probably a little bit under the industry norm, which is a bit unusual for kind of a young emerging brand, but we're really happy with our position right now and we feel really good about it.
So overall, all your channels combined, like how much did you guys grow last year?
We grew just under 50% last year. We're just under 50% again this year, year over year, which was about what we did in 16 to 17 as well. So healthy and strong, but no crazy numbers like other brands or that we look up to or peers in the industry, but solid and strong.
Yeah, those sound pretty good, I think, to a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, we're lucky that we have a lot of new places we can go to sell. So we're not just forced to find new sales in the same store, which, you know, kind of sometimes forces your hand with product expansion or line expansion or things like that. So we're lucky to be able to chase some new channels. It's nice to be sort of a balanced. We don't have any retailers that take up their 20% of our business, or we're not super heavy on D2C, or Amazon's clean and the pricing's clean. So we feel really good about being balanced right now.
But I heard you right earlier, right, that you are looking at expanding beyond belts?
You know, I think it's a good exercise for us to think through, and we definitely have ideas and plans. But at this point, you know, we feel like it would be kind of a poor use of resources when there's so much more to do. And our brand awareness is significantly lagging behind our distribution at this point. So there just seems to be a ton of kind of close to home initiatives that we could focus on first. And we don't really feel like we're leaving anything on the table because we're really focused on building the brand and having the brand be bigger than the belts. But at this point, there's even product improvements to our original product that we want to focus on to kind of just, you know, protect the space and continue to give people a better product, which is our focus in the early days. And we don't want to look past that now and start dreaming about other things.
Well, so what are your guys' biggest challenges right now? I mean, it seems like there's a lot going on.
You know, the category is really difficult to navigate with larger retailers. It's obviously any category or any conversation with larger retailers is tricky, but on the national level, belts are really challenging. They're either a high margin category for them because they're being gifted belts along with an increased order size from an apparel company, or they have private label, in-house label stuff, or it's a BOGO program. So educating larger retailers that dedicating floor space and committing to this program is the way to succeed. It's just harder because there's more people to explain it to. You know, so
right.
In the past it was a buyer, and you could be like, you know, if you don't treat it special, like special things aren't going to happen. To do that at a larger level has been tricky, but the sell-through is kind of speaking for itself now at this point. So we can take those numbers and go back and keep sort of revisiting the conversation.
And is there a certain kind of store where Arcade works best? I mean, like, do you see anything regionally or size of store or, you know, any interesting patterns?
Yeah. One of our co-founders is from Santa Cruz. And so we were lucky enough to kind of get this Santa Cruz base started at the same time as we got a snow base. And we saw snow outpacing coastal, you know, core specialty shops simply because snow pants, you know, ski or snowboard, they're sized differently. You tend to need a belt, whereas another store on the coast, you're going in because you're replacing a product that broke or something like that. So we did see in outdoor and snow the organic natural sell-through with no brand awareness, just simply an add-on sale was much more natural. But that's starting to change, and it's mostly through placement and fixturing and the 6 or 7 years of seeding and educating kids on the floor and building these kind of relationships with retailers. So yeah, we see the sell-through kind of balancing out, as well as our kind of seasonality balancing out.
And what about your retail base? You know, people are so worried about brick and mortar retail these days. How are they holding up? Like, are you seeing, you know, successes and failures? Are people going out of business? Are the strong getting stronger? I mean, what do you notice out there?
More successes than failures, for sure. We have, we're still very committed to it. We're really optimistic on it, pretty bullish on the whole thing. And we see a ton of opportunity. Luckily, we don't overextend. We're not the largest debtor to a lot of these guys. So we're really happy with it. And we kind of feel like it's a pretty natural process that some guys are going to get weeded out, and it's pretty natural, and some of it's unfortunate. And we kind of root for everybody, and we want to be a really good partner to everybody. But, you know, I see a lot of potential for it to kind of settle a little bit. And I think for us to balance out some direct consumer initiatives that hopefully come full circle back around to help the wholesale channels as well. We don't really see it as cannibalizing each other. I think that there's this really nice balance that can be found, but I think it comes from a lot of communication and being honest and open and upfront with retailers about what their goals are and what ours are. We're definitely not in the pull the ripcord or make any drastic moves that we've seen some of our peers do.
Right, right. And how many employees do you have now? Like, do you service the whole e-com thing in-house?
We do, yeah. It's all in-house. A lot of people wearing a lot of hats. We're at 10 employees, and that includes myself and David, the other co-founder. And so it's still a pretty small team in comparison to a lot of other operations out there. But for us, it's as big as it's ever been and growing. So yeah, that's kind of the current setup. We do have some external partners on kind of back-end stuff, but most of it's all in-house hustling.
Right. I bet. And so I want to ask you this. This is kind of a larger, what do you think of the state of the industry right now? I mean, you've been around a while, and I know you're in so many different facets of it, right? Outdoor and snow and skate and surf. Like, what do you think is going on out there? Or what do you think of what's going on out there?
Yeah, it's, you know, I pay attention to the conversation. I feel like we're a part of it. We definitely, you know, look around, and all the brands that we look up to or used to look up to, you know, we really want to tell our story in the industry, want to have our own little chapter, however big it ends up being. That's kind of what we continue to focus on, and staying in our lane and doing it our way. And we feel like there's a lot of other people doing the same thing. I know the Rorks and the Brixtons of the world get a lot of love, but it's for good reason. And I think as long as those types of brands, and hopefully we're lumped in with that group, stay authentic and continue to kind of focus on improving products and giving consumers what they want and doing, you know, a good job at storytelling, then everything else is going to work itself out, but it might be kind of a messy process along the way. But you can't stop progress, and it's, you know, I think that the choppy waters aren't going to kind of go away anytime soon. But I think if you have these core competencies as a brand, and you really know who you are and why you're doing what you're doing, and you don't really overextend yourself in one way or the other, you're kind of built to take some shots here and there, and hopefully just keep trudging on through. I root for the industry. I love it. I've been in it my whole life, and I'm proud to have a group of people around me trying to tell our own story and hopefully adding a really cool and interesting chapter to the book. But at the same time, I understand it's pretty stormy out there for a lot of people. And so, you know, just kind of buckle down and keep getting after it.
Well, and you talked about a few brands, but that's one of my questions I have for you is, like, what brands do you admire in, whether it's in surf, skate, snow, outdoor, whatever, or other places? Like, who do you think, as someone who's been in the industry a long time, is doing a really good job?
Yeah, the list is really, really long. I have to say I'm grateful for what Stance has done, even though they're very different people and a very different business model than us. I think that they've provided a bright spot and kind of an anchor point for a lot of retailers, especially in the accessories industry. I'm grateful that they exist and that they're doing business how they are. I'm also grateful that they're not doing belts because they're good at what they do. But, you know, that one's the most close to home. But I think the Brixtons and the Rorks and even some of the smaller, like, regional brands, like there's Thieves out of Santa Cruz and Duven out of Florida, you know, Sammy's son's company. Those are so interesting and unique and, like, optimistic and not too worried about the state of the industry. They just believe in a story they want to tell. They don't see it out there, and they're just moving forward with it. So I think we tend to focus on kind of the smaller brands and maybe the more regional stuff that we're just excited when, you know, you've been at it for 6 or 7 years and you see them and they're like, we're still alive, you're still alive. And there's been quite a few casualties along the way for other brands. It's nice to kind of see those guys standing. So I'd say those are kind of, you know, the first ones that come to mind on a pretty long list.
Well, here's the typical question I ask everyone, but I like it. So I'm going to ask you too, if you don't mind. But like, so 5 years, you know, what does Arcade look like?
Great question. You know, I hope more than anything that the industry is healthy and that we're able to have these kind of optimistic talks and we see brands doing really cool and interesting things. I think a balance between wholesale, Amazon, and direct to consumer, maybe it's this nice little Venn diagram of the three. And for us, just an anchor point for belts that maybe allows some retailers that were on the tipping point. They found an anchor point in socks. They found one in belts, and they found one in, you know, maybe some backpacks and things like that. And that found revenue keeps them alive too. If that's our legacy or something like that along those lines, sounds pretty good to me.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, is there anything I didn't ask you that you want to add or say?
Not really. No, it's, you know, we really appreciate being a part of the industry in general, even though we're in our Northern California corner. And we hope that's an added benefit to the industry in general, the Polars of the world that put Portland on the map, you know, the sense of place, the Deus is operating out of Bali and things like that. I think that's just super cool. And, you know, I hope that's, you know, that we're able to kind of add a sense of place to the industry and that's maybe slightly different than the resource-rich area down south there.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Well, thank you. I appreciate you talking to me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Tiffany. Thanks for all the work you do and for shedding light onto a lot of cool things in the industry.
Well, good. And congrats on the success. It was really cool. It's cool to see.
I appreciate it. We'll keep hustling and hopefully it keeps going the right way.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find previous podcast interviews on our website under the podcast tab. Thank you also to our sponsors and to our Executive Edition members. We appreciate each and every one of you.